Well, the other day I was walking through the city. I came out into a laneway and I saw a beautiful Ferrari sports car cruising by. The kind of car that makes me turn my head. Other people were turning to have a look. And of course, the people who bought the car, the people driving the car, I mean, that's part of why they bought it, right? They're looking for that attention. But where did that Ferrari brand come from? What's the story behind it? Who are the characters behind the Ferrari story, and what can they teach us? Well, that's exactly what the 2023 film Ferrari is all about. It's by Michael Mann. It's a biopic of Enzo Ferrari, starring Adam Driver. And he received a 7-minute standing ovation at the Venice Film Festival for his performance. Just try that at home, standing up and doing a standing ovation for 7 minutes. Was it really that great? Well, I think Adam Driver was great in this film, but I'm not sure the film itself warrants a 7-minute standing ovation. Stay tuned and you'll find out why. Welcome to Pink Door Culture Club, your eclectic entertainment guide. My name is Jeremiah Burns, and this week, as I said in the intro, we're looking at the 2023 film Ferrari, directed by Michael Mann and starring Adam Driver. As the world gets fixated on electric cars, this film is all about old school racing in the 1950s. Now, I'm not a big car guy. I did own an MX-5, a Mazda MX-5 at one point, and I absolutely love the 2010 documentary Senna about Ayrton Senna. But I do like Michael Mann's films, and he is a filmmaker who came to the fore in the late 70s, early 80s. He's famous for several high-profile neo-noir films. Heat from 1995. What a film! Amazing film. Collateral from 2004, but he's also done several of these kind of biopics or historical movies as well. So he did Last of the Mohicans in 1992, The Insider in 1999, and he also did Ali, the story of Muhammad Ali, starring Will Smith in 2001. All right, now before we get into looking at the film, and there'll be plenty of spoilers there as usual, remember that the show is now a YouTube show as well as a podcast. It's released every Friday, Australian time. And I'm also releasing what I've now dubbed Pop Culture Proverbs through the week. And so the idea of those is that a little bit of wisdom, brief, short form video inspired by pop culture. So you can check those out as well. If you like the show, remember, please tell someone else about it. Please like and subscribe and follow and comment. All of those things help. And I'd just like to hear from you as well. You can be in touch via the Facebook page in the comments on the video if you're watching, or directly you can send me an email, pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. The first segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Spellbound, where we think about some of the strengths and the weaknesses of Ferrari. And the first thing to say is that the performances of Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz are both great. Like, I understand why people at the Venice Film Festival liked Adam Driver's performance. Like, his physicality in this role, his presence on screen, his overall charisma is great. Adam Driver is a very tall guy. I didn't realize how tall he was when you see him in the film. I mean, he's 6'2", so he's not the tallest, but he really looks tall compared to everyone else. And he has these great costumes, like really old Italian suits. He's always wearing sunglasses. And it's not just that, it's the way that he walks with a sense of gravitas, his posture, where he's kind of looming over people. And he has this hair as well, this kind of slicked back gray hair. And he wore apparently some prosthetics for this film to kind of bulk up and give that sense of age to his character. And he wears that well. It obviously helps him get into character. And so whenever he's on screen, I mean, this is true of Adam Driver generally, but whenever he's on screen, you know, there is that sense of presence and charisma that's quite engaging. And Penelope Cruz, she is an intense on-screen presence as well. You know, as his wife, who knows that, you know, he's cheating on her, and that, you know, there's all these other issues in their life. There's a lot from her that's conveyed through silence, just her staring off into space or staring at the TV or riding in a car silently. And she does that really well. And then when you put them together, you get this amazing on-screen relationship. It's riddled with unresolved grief. There's a lot of high tension and high conflict. You know, it bubbles away and then it kind of explodes at different points. It's quite compelling to watch on screen. So that's definitely something that I thought was a strength of this film. A second thing that I loved about this film was the race footage, the way in which they used onboard cameras and drone footage to put the viewer in the car and create a sense of speed and drama and danger. You really get a feel from that of how basic and manual the technology was that they were using. It did remind me of Senna, which I mentioned at the top, that 2010 documentary about Ayrton Senna, where there was a lot of over-the-shoulder footage of him racing with manual gear changes, and just gave you a real sense of like what it is to be in the cockpit. You do get that in this film as well. And the other thing they do well, I thought, with the racing footage was in the final race, the big race, there's a lot of that, like, you know, extreme close-up type stuff, but then they'll cut to like a really, you know, extreme wide shot of the rolling mountains or the countryside in the Alps, for example. And the soundtrack and sound effects will shift suddenly as well. And I think that created a great contrast in the film and kind of shifted you from that intense drama to the natural beauty of the landscape. So overall, I thought the racing footage worked well. Third thing that I thought was interesting about this film were the themes. Now, we're going to get into the themes in the next segment of this episode, but there were some interesting and deep themes, like an interesting exploration of masculinity. You would expect nothing less from Michael Mann. A lot on marriage, on grief, on success, on the personal life versus the professional life. So as I said, we'll dig into that in the second segment, but I thought it covered some interesting ground in that regard. Now, some things I didn't like. There were some distracting details in this film that I found annoying, or they just pulled me out of the world. So it's set in Italy, but everyone's speaking in English, but with these really strong Italian accents. That's fine, no problem. But the accents from some actors were a little bit patchy. You know, and Adam Driver, almost perfect, but here and there it does drop away, and you suddenly will get a word or a phrase where you hear an unexpected American accent. And it does detract a bit from the atmosphere of the film. And another tiny thing that I kept on noticing, the person I was watching the film with didn't notice this, so maybe it's just me, but Adam Driver is wearing a wig, and you can see the hairline where the wig is attached to his head. I reckon I saw it 3, 4, 5 times, and I found that very distracting. Like, he looks so good otherwise. I think it's that his character was so complete otherwise that seeing that just kind of ruined it for me and took away a little bit of the magic. Very small, but had some impact. I also felt like this film had a bit of a disappointing payoff. Like, the final payoff in this film, it was okay, but it didn't spell out the Ferrari success that came after Enzo Ferrari in enough detail for those who don't know it, and maybe even for those who do know it, but, you know, were just waiting to see it. So they kind of finished the film, black screen, couple of titles come up explaining maybe just 3 or 4 details. There was no contemporary photo of Piero Ferrari, even though he's still involved in the company and was such a you know, went on to become such a central part of it. They refer to that. No photograph, no snapshot of the commercial success of Ferrari, even though that's a big theme of the film. I looked it up. This is now a company that has $6 billion in revenue, €6 billion in revenue every year. And they don't kind of spell that out. There's no summary of their subsequent racing success, even though the film's about, will we get racing success? Michael Schumacher, five consecutive driver and constructor championships, let alone what they did with Niki Lauda and more recently with Sebastian Vettel. That's not talked about. It's not mentioned. Now, it's true that the film's all about Enzo, right? It's good for the focus to be on him. I can understand the argument for having a subtle, you know, closure and not having to talk about everything in detail. But I felt like this could have landed more powerfully and there could have been more context about how Enzo's life paved the way for this and this and this and this. And it could have been a more exciting finish. But really, probably the biggest thing that I didn't like about this film was, you know, I would describe it as problematic pacing or length. There is something about this film that doesn't quite work for me. Like, really good to have a very detailed character study, but it's too long and too flat. So there's some exciting race sequences at the start and at the end, some good moments of characters sort of breaking into conflict, but there's not enough high points. There's too many long, slow moments in between all of that. Again, if I contrast it with Senna, like, I was absolutely gripped all the way through Senna. And like, this story is probably just as exciting, but I wasn't gripped in the same way. It did make me wonder, is that just a reflection of Enzo? Like, is Enzo just a bit of a boring character? Like, what I'm finding boring is not the film, but the person. But, you know, either way, the film could have been made more interesting, I think. Make it shorter, cut some things out, speed some things up. It doesn't have to be, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, nonstop action, but it needed a bit more energy and pace, I felt. So there you go. There are some of the good things and maybe some of the drawbacks of Ferrari. The second segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Rear Window. And the idea is to look more closely and think more deeply about some of the ideas or themes that come up, you know, indirectly or directly through Ferrari. And probably the first one and the biggest one is traditional masculine codes of honor. You know, this is a real Michael Mann kind of thing. He explores it in the movie Heat, like I said at the start, where you've kind of got Al Pacino as a cop, a seasoned, hardened cop, and Robert De Niro as a seasoned, hardened criminal. And it's kind of the battle of two men, you know, who will not give in. In a different way, in Collateral, you've got Tom Cruise as the very knowing, cunning, you know, Grey Fox assassin. And Jamie Foxx, on the other hand, is kind of quite naive, but he has to get up to speed with that level of masculinity to like survive and, you know, stay alive. You know, masculinity seen through this lens is about winning and being recognized as the winner. Even if that's just in the movie Heat, for example, just from one peer, even if the goal is ultimately trivial, like winning a car race, I think, I'm not sure if I'm going to lose anyone here, but I don't think, you know, in the big scheme of history, winning a single car race it's not that meaningful, right? But, you know, in this world, it is. It's super important. And also in this sort of traditional masculine code of honor, success comes from a very stoic, ascetic approach. You know, a lot of focus, a lot of self-control, a lot of discipline, no complaining. You know, the irony or the hypocrisy is that in his personal life, Enzo is a total womanizer, has no control over his appetites whatsoever. And so, that, you know, I think Michael Mann is good at painting that and drawing out that hypocrisy and that complexity. The other thing I think that Michael Mann is doing in this film and in other films is showing that in this view of masculinity, success comes from the courage to continually push the limits, to sacrifice everything, even to sacrifice your own life and even to sacrifice the lives of others. Enzo is willing to sacrifice the lives of his drivers, and he calls on them to not stop at the limit, but to go further. That is the only way they will truly succeed as individuals and as a team. And I think there's something about that kind of masculine ego it's as old as time. It's as old as history. There's nothing new there, really. And it's still present, right? Even though there's a lot of sort of talk about getting rid of that, you still see in motor racing, in boxing, in UFC, like UFC and WWE, that form of masculinity, you see it kind of writ large, I think. You see it in the old space race where people push themselves to the absolute limit to get to the moon first. And now in the new space race, as all the entrepreneurs, you know, push the limits to be the first to commercialize that. And you see it now as well with technology like AI, where again, you've got these entrepreneurs jostling with each other to kind of win the war, so to speak. And the film made me think about the benefits of that. And the necessity of that, perhaps, you know, this mode of operating, this form of masculinity, it does drive things forward in some ways. It does mean that new things get pioneered, they get tried, they get achieved, but it has its problems as well, right? Like, people are seen as expendable. Like I said, Enzo kind of definitely has that view of his drivers, and even to some extent of the spectators of the race, because that's a huge point at the end where they, you know, they end up in trouble as well. And people get hurt as selfish egos kind of take over, and it becomes a trap for the protagonists as well, for the people who operate in this kind of traditional masculine code of honor where there's kind of no way out. Even if you're wrong, even if you know you're being selfish or you've put someone else in danger, you've put your honor on the line, and there's no way of stepping back. There's no way of saying you were wrong. Like, that wouldn't fly. And I was thinking it's quite different from something like the traditional Judeo-Christian ethic, in which masculinity, it's still strong, it's still powerful, but it's focused on selflessness and sacrifice and humility and forgiveness and patience and gentleness. And of course, that's embodied in that ethic, in a person like Jesus, a religious figure, or, you know, even a character like Aragorn from Lord of the Rings. I saw a meme recently about how he embodied the best of masculinity. And I was thinking, yeah, there is that great strength and charisma and power to Aragorn, but there is that love, really, love for others and sacrifice, a different form of masculinity. A second thing I was thinking about in this film is the thin margins involved in commercial success. So, you know, I guess what we see in the film is a person in a business that seemed successful. You know, Enzo had the suit, the sunglasses, the women, the recognition. But behind that veneer, you know, the business was in trouble, financial crisis. There was relational crisis in the family. There were accidents and injuries and deaths and controversy. And it made me think about the thin line between failure and being just totally forgotten and, you know, succeeding and lasting, and how that can be the difference between a single decision, a single paycheck, a single moment. And it made me go and look up some examples of that from the commercial world, from the business world. So get this, Federal Express, the world famous courier package delivery business. At one point early on, they had a fuel bill for $24,000, but only $5,000 left in the bank. So one of the senior leaders took that $5,000 to Las Vegas and gambled it and made $27,000. Yeah, they could meet their fuel bill and had some money left over as well. And that's how they got by. That is actually how they survived from that moment of crisis to the other side. Dyson, you know, about Dyson vacuum cleaners and hair dryers and all of that. James Dyson, in the build-up of that business, three mortgages, he created 5,000 prototypes. He had $4 million in debt before a single product was launched. Or Airbnb. They actually ran out of money. You know, they're sort of taken over accommodation now, but early on they had run out of money and that was it. The business was over. And so they created this, to try and raise money, they created this novelty cereal packets with cereal connected with the election that was happening at that time. They went to the Democratic National Conference and sold these cereal packets and managed to raise, I think it was like $40,000, which got Airbnb going again. And, you know, the rest is history. I mean, these are like extraordinary examples of being willing to take risks and to make something, you know, in order to make something work. I think what you don't hear are the thousands, if not more, stories of examples of where the same type of risk was taken, but it didn't work out, right? Like, it's a great story when it works out. But how many people are bankrupt with nothing saying, don't do it? I watched a video where Mark Cuban, a famous entrepreneur, talks about, you know, what should you do if you want to become an entrepreneur? And the first thing he says is, don't quit your job. He says, you hear all these amazing stories, but really, it's absolutely the minority. You need to have a more balanced approach. You don't need to quit your job and you shouldn't to start with, which I thought was great, especially here. I mean, he's definitely kind of like an alpha male type guy. And even he's saying, look, it typically doesn't pay off. Don't do it. A third thing I was thinking about as I watched Ferrari was the limits of human power. Enzo's a powerful guy, super powerful guy. He's an engineering genius. He has money. And he believed and hoped that he could apply that expertise to save his sick son, Alfredo. And that comes up in one of his arguments with the Penelope Cruz character. But, you know, the thing that drives him crazy is that he couldn't save his son. It didn't matter what he did. It didn't matter what he knew. He couldn't save his son from sickness and from death. Which, you know, is the great tragedy of the film. Like, it's the thread running through the film. But it reminded me, you know, of how finite humans are as well. That no amount of money or intellect or fame can ultimately stop death. It does worry me that some artificial intelligence pioneers seem to think that's exactly what AI can do. Solve every problem, including sickness and death. Ray Kurzweil is a really interesting thinker and writer and speaker, but he's kind of pretty insistent that, you know, humans are on the brink of immortality. you know, I can definitely see how AI might help with medical research, but I feel like there's a lack of humility and perspective that comes with insisting and believing that any new technology can kind of solve all the world's problems. You know, inevitably, it solves some, it amplifies others, but it doesn't change human nature. And a fourth and final thing I was thinking about as I watched Ferrari was the destructive and the power and the productive power of grief. So I've mentioned what it was that Enzo grieved. And, you know, in the film, I think you see the way in which the weight of grief can break a relationship. Because there's these memories of the past that are idyllic and become idealized as well. And they're really contrasted with the current pain that just will not go away. And the film also reminded me that, you know, grief can lead people to seek refuge and restoration in the wrong places. So the grief of war and Alfredo's death leads Enzo to start a separate family, you know, with a different child on the side. But I was also thinking about how, you know, when you research celebrities and famous people and great achievers, they often have pain or grief in their past that drives them to be productive and to succeed. And Madonna and Bono from U2 are both contemporary examples who've, you know, who made it big in the music industry, but both talk about how the grief and the rage of losing a parent at a young age drove them to achieve, sometimes in a really dysfunctional way, but sometimes in a super creative way, and to make the most of every moment. So I was thinking about, you know, what's the wisdom in finding ways to manage grief so that it is productive rather than destructive, and that even productivity doesn't become dysfunctional. The final segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called The Man Who Knew Too Much, where I list off some trivia associated with the movie or the music that we're looking at. So when it comes to Ferrari, it was interesting to read that the initial actor cast to play Enzo was Christian Bale, and then he couldn't take on the project, so Hugh Jackman was next up, and so Adam Driver was the third in line, and who obviously ended up doing it. A second thing I learned is that the 1957 Mille Miglia, I think is how you say it, the race that's shown at the end of the film, that was the last race in its original format, because there had been, get this, 56 known deaths in 24 runnings. So you see this in the film, like deaths of drivers, deaths of spectators. This was a super dangerous thing. 56 people died in 24 outings, and so they switched up the format after that 1957 race. Now, here's something I didn't know that I found really intriguing, that if you're an Adam Driver fan, you're like, of course, everyone knows this. This is so well known, but I didn't know it. Before becoming a famous actor, Adam Driver was a Marine. He turned 18 just 2 months after the 9/11 attacks, and he says that the attacks motivated him to serve in the armed forces. And he served for 2 years and 8 months before receiving a medical discharge. And I thought back on some movies I'd seen him in, and he's in Logan Lucky, the Steven Soderbergh film, and he plays a veteran with an amputation in that film. And in real life, he now runs an arts not-for-profit foundation for the armed forces. That was really interesting to learn. And a final interesting fact about Adam Driver is that he grew up singing in his dad's church choir. And he also plays the piano. And apparently you can see clips of him doing that in a couple of different movies and perhaps some stuff on YouTube as well. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. All right, we are at the end of this episode of Pink Door Culture Club. Overall, I thought Ferrari was okay, but definitely too long and too flat for me. You know, I will go back and watch other Michael Mann films. Like, I will definitely go back to Heat over and over again. I will go back and watch Collateral a couple more times in my life. I loved those films, but I'm not that excited about watching Ferrari again in the future. If I want to rewatch a racing movie, I will be rewatching Senna, the 2010 documentary. You have to watch that. I'm going to feature that on another episode for sure. Or even Rush, starring Chris Hemsworth from 2013. That's a great movie, all about Niki Lauda and James Hunt and the rivalry between those two. I feel like Senna and Rush are racing movies done right. Whereas Ferrari, yes, I know, I get it's a biopic, but it's a racing movie that just falls flat for me. Okay, I mentioned at the top, remember, this is now a podcast and a YouTube show, so check out whichever ones of those you prefer. And however you're engaging, make sure you like and follow and share and comment and tell someone else about it and tell me about it as well. And as I mentioned at the top, I'm having a go at a series of short videos called Pop Culture Proverbs, a couple of little life lessons dropped into various channels during the week based on whatever it is that we've looked at on a Friday. Well, you can be in touch with me in the comments or via the Facebook page, or you can email me, of course, at pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.